Welcome to the Sediment, the 2024 American Society of Pediatric Nephrology podcast. My name is Emily Zangla. I'm a third-year pediatric nephrology fellow at the University of Minnesota, and I'm joined by my co-host, Sudha Garamella from Prisma Health in South Carolina. So, Sudha, tell the listeners about yourself.
Thank you, Emily. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Sediment. I hope everyone has had a chance to rest and relax and recuperate from ASPN 2024 annual meeting. I am the podcast editor for the Sediment, and I live in sunny Greenville in South Carolina. I am an associate professor at the University of South Carolina. I have a strong interest in medical education, simulation science, as well as the nephrology. But I am absolutely thrilled each year because I get to talk to some of the most important brains and thought leaders in the field of pediatric nephrology through this podcast. Fun fact about myself is that I have learned three different forms of Indian classical dance as a child, and now I cannot dance to save my life. All right. Who's going next, Emily?
Matthew, can you introduce yourself?
Sure. So I'm Matthew Demai. I'm a pediatric nephrologist at SickKids in Toronto. I'm also a scientist at the SickKids Research Institute in the cell biology program and associate prof of pediatrics. My main interest is genetics of kidney disease that affect children, mostly rare conditions. And in the lab, we work on doing gene discovery for novel conditions, mostly focused on atypical hemolytic uremic syndrome and kidney tubulopathies. And a fun fact about me is before embarking in my nephrology career, actually I was a PI on a randomized controlled trial in Bangladesh on the impact of iron on infection in malnourished children. So I took a slightly different path after that.
That's wonderful. So did you get to spend some time in Bangladesh?
Yep, quite a bit of time. And I spent some time in India and Sri Lanka also. Oh, and I was a second year resident at the time. So
that's a interesting. Wonderful experience, I think, to have all of that wide perspective on global health. Welcome to the podcast.
All right. Ashima, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Ashima Gulati. I'm an attending nephrologist at the Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C. My main clinical interest is my outpatient program, which is the Inherited and Polycystic Kidney Diseases program. I love taking care of kids who have these rare genetic conditions, and my lab focuses on using some zebrafish and now mouse models of PKD. So I'm very excited to be here today. And the fun fact, which Sudha just prompted me to think more, and I just cannot miss saying that only today I learned that my electric vehicle got invited or qualified for a self-driving package. And I'm actually considering taking that because I just learned that ChatGPT can be co-author. And so I'm totally going to rely on it.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's pretty cool.
What? You're shocking us with this news, Ashima. Now I have 10 thoughts in my head because ChatGPT has got to be the best co-author, right? Hopefully you don't have to send ChatGPT 15 emails to respond. Wonderful. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. Marcy?
Hi, I'm Marcy Laster, pediatric nephrologist at Indiana University, and my interests are mainly research. I am an NIH-funded researcher, and I study differences and disparities in chronic kidney disease, mineral bone disorder. And an interesting fact about myself, I don't know how interesting you want to get, but this is probably the most interesting fact. I actually won a kissing contest in college. I won $5,000 for kissing for 15 hours. I was kissing my now husband, who was then my boyfriend at the time, and it was for Kiss FM. So there's your interesting fact. Maybe
oh
too interesting.
God, Marcy, that is so amazing. And it's Really, that is, I think that takes the prize for the best fun fact in all episodes of The Sediment ever.
Yep, 100%. Wow.
Welcome to the podcast.
I'm Meredith.
Hi, I'm Meredith Harris. I'm one of the nephrologists at Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago. At this point, I'm mostly clinical, but have a very budding interest in genetics and K-cut, as well as inflammatory conditions, especially HUS. We're actually starting a nephrogenetics clinic this month, which I'm very excited about. But I have a lot to learn. And my fun fact is it will never compete with Marcy's, but I'm a budding barista in my own right, and I'm on a pursuit for the best cappuccino in the world. And I found a very good one in Toronto, but I can't remember the name of the place, but I could remember the cross streets.
Wow. Yeah, the food in Toronto was very good. It was very good. I think we all enjoyed that. So
absolutely.
That's pretty great. Well, thanks for being here. And Amy, you want to go next?
My name is Amy Kogan, and I'm a pediatric nephrologist at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And my primary interests, both clinical and research, are with hypertension and chronic kidney disease. And I am studying how lifestyle and other external factors can affect outcomes in both of those conditions, hypertension and chronic kidney disease. Based on some of your fun facts, I'm surprised you made it to medicine, because it sounds like you're other achievements were quite notable. But I can't really think of any fun facts, but I have three little boys, three sons, and they are the most challenging aspect of my life. So.
Well, that must have been hard for you to get away from them to go to Toronto for a few days. So, well, thanks for being here. Okay. And then Sushil.
I'm Dr. Sushil Gupta. I'm a pediatric nephrologist. Work with Dr. Lester. She's here too, my colleague. So I'm so glad to see her. And I'm at RYU Health, Riley Children's Hospital. I do mostly clinical work, and mostly I do general nephrology. My interests are cystic kidney disease, and I have taken care of patients with sickle cell disease. So. Fun facts, you know, I'm very, very cultural person. So I'm a president of Heritage of India Foundation in Louisville. So I do a lot of cultural activities. This last weekend, there was a parade, Pegasus Parade on Derby. So I was there. So if you Google you might find me there on the TV cameras.
Wow, that's pretty awesome.
Wow, that is amazing.
My name is Kim Reedy. I am a pediatric nephrologist at the Children's Hospital at Montefiore in the Bronx. I am very interested in both in research, both basic science, looking at tissue repair after injury and podocyte disease in babies born preterm, as well as some clinical research. And a fun fact about me, I grew up without a television. That's a fun fact that not everybody knows.
Wow, that must have been a very enriching childhood, though, I must say.
Yes, I read a lot of books. I wish I could do it to my own children, but, you know.
I know. I think we've all lost that battle somehow. But welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited to start us off with this fantastic group of individuals who were at the annual meeting, moderating various sessions. We have so many multi-talented people on this show. And in the second part of our podcast, we are also going to be talking to all of our awardees. So I'm super excited to get this episode kicked off. We're going to start with the workshop that we had on Friday, which was all about genetics, nephrogenetics. And we are lucky enough to have both Matthew and Ashima, who were moderators of this, along with Kim Reedy. Matthew, give our listeners a recap about how things went and what was the idea behind this session and what the objectives were.
Yeah, thanks. So basically, the main goal of the session was to provide a general overview of all things related to genetic testing, followed by a case-based discussion to review some of the concepts that were covered in the initial part of the lecture, and provide some interesting examples for the clinicians in the room. And I'll be interested to hear from Meredith if we were successful in our approach. But basically, the way it started is we just had a very simple framework where we wanted to answer the question, why using genetic testing, who should be tested, how to do it, and what to do with the results. And without going into too much detail, so we went around and, or I sort of covered all of these different aspects, so that the clinicians would get a pretty broad overview of these four key questions, with some practical tidbits, and mentioning along the way some tools that clinicians can use to analyze their own results. For example, we went through some examples of a variant that was found in one of my patients with congenital nephrotic syndrome, where the variant was deemed to be what we call a variant of unknown significance, where it's not clear if the variant is causing the disease that we're studying. And I showed a variety of approach to try to convince yourself whether the variant is indeed pathogenic or not. Maybe I can stop here and just see with what Ashima and Kimberly wanted to say.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Matthew. Ashima, can you tell us what your impressions were and a little bit more about the cases?
Yeah, I mean, I think Matthew started with a very nice overview, which kind of like laid the framework for like the audience. And it was, I think, well attended, given that there were like parallel sessions going on. So I think people are interested to know, like, you know, what nephrogenetics is and what, you know, we can do with these tools that we have readily available. And then we were, you know, able to present three cases, which I think each case had a very new and distinct and very valuable message. You know, the case one was the PKD Kakit case, which, you know, was presented by myself and Dr. Lisa Gray-Woodford from CHOP our fellow. So, you know, I think the main message was that, you know, how HNF1-beta variants can actually present with such severe phenotypic heterogeneity that unless you do a molecular testing, right, sometimes it just becomes impossible to pinpoint that molecular cause, although you have clinical suspicions, but, you know, really it can present in such a varied spectrum. So I think that was very valuable. And then the second case was how you cannot ACE everything in terms of like providing ACE inhibitors to all proteinuria, and how tubulin mutations can cause albuminuria, but still not mechanism of glomerular filtration or the hyperfiltration that would be amenable to ACE inhibition, and how molecular testing can actually prevent, you know, inadvertent use of medications, and, you know, just conforming to like the basic doing of like, do no harm to the patient, don't give unnecessary medications. And I think the third case that was presented by Matthew, and, you know, Matthew can maybe talk a little bit more about it once he talks about his survival tips, was actually taking, you know, a very novel presentation of a gene, and, you know, which has not been, you know, so much, is not known to present like within a particular cystic phenotype in humans, and how this, you know, knowledge from animal models and finding of this gene in this patient actually can tell a story, which is like almost bedside to bench, you know, can translate findings. So Matthew found a novel gene presentation in his case, which is not well described. So I think all the three cases had very good messages. And yeah, it was a lot of fun discussing all of that. So I think Matthew, can, if you can tell about some of the survival tips that you mentioned there, I think those were really great.
Sure, but Kimberly, did you want to add anything?
I guess I would just quickly say that I think some of the great things that came out of it was sort of the increasing need for us as clinicians and for our trainees in particular to learn about how to understand and interpret genetic testing and in order to counsel our families. And I will say, kudos to the our fellow trainees who presented the cases and to the other attending physicians who moderated and helped with the cases. But there were two medical students in the audience who both told me, hey, that was really interesting. I was like, do you want to do nephrology now? So anyway, so your tips are great, though. I'll let you go to you.
Meredith, do you want to kind of give your thoughts and what you took away from that session?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like I said, I thought it was maybe my favorite of all of the PAS sessions. I thought it was really powerful having the fellows get the cases. I think anytime you have a case, it really helps sink things in your brain. But I think for me, the biggest things that I take away and that I hope everyone takes away, and we mentioned it a few times, is, you know, we'll have patients that come in and they say, well, they had genetics 5 years ago and they were negative. But the world of genetics is exploding. And just because something was negative 5 years or was a VUS 5 years ago does not mean that it is now. And I thought some of the NOMAD and the ClinVar and some of those tools were really helpful. I think with genetics exploding the way it is, I think we as clinicians and nephrologists are going to have to help take some of the burden off of our genetics colleagues and know when it's something that we can kind of look up and order and sort of make kind of sense of, or if it's something that we truly need, you know, a more kind of genetic-based person to do. So I think those tools were really helpful to at least kind of give people a background of where to start and kind of sound informed before we then rope in people who are trained, you know, fully in genetics. I think the one other point I really hope people remember and that I remember is I think we used to be a very biopsy kind of first community, but biopsies are not without risk and obviously something you don't want to put a child through if you don't have to. And I think more and more we're turning to genetics before we go to a biopsy. And if there's nothing that we can find from the genetics, then we go to a biopsy. But if we can explain the presentation with genetics, it saves a big procedure for a family and a child.
Yeah, those are awesome tips. Thank you. And then Matthew, do you want to talk about your survival tips?
So at the end, I just figured it would be a good idea to have like little snippets that the clinicians can remember. So maybe I can go through a few. So the first one was, if a phenotype is clear, narrower testing is preferable to decrease the risk of incidental finding. So for example, if you do an exome or a genome, you can find a lot of different things like breast cancer variants. So you need to be ready to deal with that. And there was one case where the case that we presented, where we were sure it was HNF1 beta, and that's what we ordered, and it was negative. Eventually, broader testing revealed that the variant was CNNM2, or the variant was in CNNM2, a gene that is known to be associated with hypomagnesemia. The second tip was screen for extrarenal abnormalities to crystallize your diagnosis. Such as imaging, hearing tests, ophthalmology, and whatever else. The third one, for pediatric onset disease, have a low threshold to test early. And I think Meredith alluded to this a little bit earlier. If testing was done more than 5 years before, reassess the results. If it was negative, redo the test because there's some vitage issue. If it was positive with a VUS, reanalyze to see if it was upgraded or downgraded as a benign or pathogenic variant. If the broad test is negative, for example, an exome or a genome, there's no need to order a narrower panel if it's negative. And number six, so be ready to discuss the implication of the local laws or lack thereof regarding genetic discrimination. So this was something that I covered because it's really important. But basically, it's the ability for companies, insurance companies in particular, to use genetic data to discriminate against people. And in many countries, it's illegal, such as the US, Europe, and Canada, and other places as well. But everybody needs to know what is the local regulations. Seven, discuss the pros and cons of genetic testing early with the family. Number eight, consider referral for gene discovery if negative testing. But if there's a high probability of a genetic etiology, such as consanguinity, consider this was mostly for fellows, consider writing a case report on patients with a VUS that is likely to be pathogenic, so that it's in the literature. If other people find the same variant in their patient, then they know it's probably pathogenic. And when in doubt, consult a kidney genetic expert or a genetic counselor. So I think nobody should be afraid of asking questions or asking help. And another good forum for this is PEDNEF, for all the people that are members for that. It's very useful. So these were my survival tips that I offered them. I don't know if there's any comments from the other panel members.
Those are amazing tips, Matthew. Thank you so much. Really appreciate all of the learning points and the workshop, which was a very strong start to the ASPN annual conference. And I think maybe if you are agreeable, those tips can be shared in the show notes that we have with this episode. The point is well taken about not discriminating against anyone on the basis of these genetic tests and results, and which is a great segue for our next session, which was a great session we had about social determinants of health. And we have Marcy here to talk to us about that. So Marcy, can you give us a recap of the session you moderated and what you took away from it?
So the session was on the association of social determinants of health with access and outcomes in kidney disease. And what I appreciated about this session is that it went a little deeper than we tend to go in the social determinants of health sessions. For instance, it looked at associations within the U.S., like literacy and financial access being associated with worse outcomes. But it also took a look at both rural and global health. And one of the main things that stood out for me was Dr. Bonilla Felix describing a patient who had nephrotic syndrome, a child with nephrotic syndrome, who later died because of lack of access to prednisone, something that we use freely here, I would dare say, like water. But you just see what the world has to deal with. And it makes you wonder if there's some responsibility or anything that we can do as such a resourced pediatric nephrology community. The other, I think, unique aspect about this particular session was the focus on Hispanic, both culture and language and outcomes. What was described by Dr. Matossian was that Hispanic patients tend to have worse access to transplant, and that there's some things that may get in the way of our rapport that we need to keep in mind. One is the importance of language, and two is sort of the dynamics culturally that she opened our eyes to, and understanding the cultural dynamics, the importance of family, the importance of how we approach our patients. And I really appreciated that about her talk. So those were the main highlights from that session.
Absolutely. And you know, the thing that really stuck with me even after the session and I was thinking about it is she had a slide which said, the forest is as important as the tree. Basically, you have to understand people in the cultural context of their lived experience. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, we have too much of a very, take my advice or leave it kind of approach, which sometimes goes down the wrong way, and the difference between competence and cultural congruence. So I think that was a great talk. And, you know, if you've missed it, you can, if you have the live, the option to go online and look at it, that is one talk that I think is very significant. So thank you for putting that together.
And then Amy, did you want to chime in anything else that you want listeners to know about from that session?
I think to the talk about the culturally sensitive and appropriate matching of patients, the transplant intervention trial that they described in Chicago, where patients were really intentionally matched culturally with the providers and were explained things in their language and that they showed that there were improved outcomes for those patients. And I think that's really amazing. And it also made me think that sometimes all of these systemic barriers to our patients seem really overwhelming and it feels like we can't do anything about them. But I think talking to each other, our colleagues, and sharing things that we've done with in our programs can be really useful, because I think you have to really come up with innovative ideas to make a difference, because these problems are so huge. And so I would love to see more like workshopping of that even in the future, because I think sharing ideas will be really powerful.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's a point well taken, Amy. All right. So the first day we had a lot of sessions. It was a jam-packed conference, and we still have one more session that we would like to discuss. Emily, do you think this is a good time for us to pivot to our awards presentation and the ASPN award ceremony that happened at the conference?
Yes, I think we'll do that, and then we can end with sickle cell.
So we're very pleased to welcome our president, Dr. Jody Smith. Hello. Hi, Jody. and we also have with us a few other luminaries in our field with us who are joining us along with our superstar awardees. Emily, would you do us the honors of doing a quick set of introductions? Everyone who's joining us who hasn't introduced themselves, I hope some of you are returning guests on this podcast. So I hope you remember, we always ask you for a fun fact about yourself. And if this is the first time you're joining us, please start with your affiliations, what your interests are, and then one really good fun fact that we can use to promote the podcast.
Jody, do you want to start?
Sure. I'm Jody Smith. I'm at Seattle Children's. A fun fact about me, I think people probably know this, that I'm Canadian. And so it was great to be at ASPN, having the PS meeting in Toronto. But I realized that when I was asked to sing O Canada, that I normally sing it in French. And so I dramatically failed when I did that. So.
Thanks for sharing that. Dr. Flynn, can you tell listeners about yourself?
Hi, I'm Joseph Flynn. I'm a nephrologist in Seattle, and I'm the editor of Pediatric Nephrology, our society's journal. And fun fact would be, well, I should have prepared better to come up with one, actually. Perhaps no fun fact from me today.
Well, can I prompt your memory a little bit? Do you want to tell us about your pet? I know that you have a new one.
Oh, okay. Fun fact. I have had 5 dogs. All of them have had proper first and last names. Oh. Some of them have had literary names, and our current dog is named Oliver Twist.
Oh, love it. That's wonderful, Oliver Twist.
Okay, we'll go to Dr. Mann.
You wanted to hear the other 4 dog names?
Yes, we do, of course.
Okay. Well, we had Ferris Wheeler, we had Winston Churchill,
that's a good one.
We had Miss Greta Garbo, and we had Dexter Morgan.
Wonderful. Those sound like excellent dog names, just all around. No offense to the people who originally had those names, but I think those are much better canine names. Excellent. All right, whom were you calling on next, Emily?
Dr. Mann.
Hi, Emily and Suda and everyone, thanks. So my name's John Mann. I'm a nephrologist at Nationwide Children's Hospital, The Ohio State University College of Medicine. And presently, I'm our director for faculty development. So as I tell people, I've moved to the ultimate challenge, which is teaching the true adult learners. If the adults don't want to learn, they just sit in the back on their smartphones and completely ignore the speaker. So it's all about needs assessment, because if they don't think they need it, they ain't going to sit for it. So it's a little bit like an ASPN meeting, isn't it, Jody? A little bit. So my fun fact is that I get to take responsibility for bringing the inestimable David Haynes into pediatric nephrology, because he was a lowly intern for me many years ago, debating between hem-onc and nephrology. And it wasn't me, but I got him a chance to work with people like Carl Bates and Don Patisky Marty Terman, and sort of it caught fire. So it's really neat to see David get this award this year, clearly deserving, not because I was involved with him, but because of all the things that he's done.
Wonderful. Welcome to the podcast. And we have our awardees here next.
So I guess it's a segue into David. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. So John's being far too modest, saying he didn't have a big deal to do with that. But so I'm David Haynes. I'm a peds nephrologist at Riley, Indiana School of Medicine. I am division chief there. So fun fact about me is I grew up in a small town in Indiana of about 30,000 people, and I am one of two nephrologists from that place. And John David Spencer was a year behind me. We went to high school together. So the odds of that are pretty astronomical, that two peds nephrologists, especially like researching peds nephrologists, would grow up in the same small town in Indiana.
So David, what's the only unifying factor besides they grew up in the same small town in Indiana?
We got David in her name.
I don't know. The Davids, as we called them. Yeah.
The Davids of pediatric nephrology, right? It's a famous group. Wonderful. And we have Sarah Schwartz.
Hi, I'm Sarah Schwartz. I'm a peds nephrologist at Texas Children's Hospital in Houston at Baylor College of Medicine. I am medical director of our chronic dialysis program. And an interesting fact, I guess, so I really enjoy trying different foods in different places, enjoy presentation, enjoy different types of food. But that being said, I really do not enjoy cooking at all. I'll bake. I like baking. But do not like cooking. This whole idea of seasoning to taste really does not work with my nephrology brain that likes things to be exact. And so instead, I enjoy a really good meal.
I'm with you on that 100%. The best meal is the one that you didn't have to cook. Welcome. So what I think is, since we're going to highlight our awardees, we really wanted to start off with talking a little bit about Dr. Brophy. And I think, Dr. Flynn, can I call upon you to tell us a little bit about Dr. Patrick Brophy, who received the awards, the Founders Award for this year for ASPN?
Well, thank you for asking me to do this, I think. It is hard to know where to begin to talk about Pat Brophy. I'll start with a fun fact, which is that Pat was my fellow at the University of Michigan, and he and his wife Jody hosted our going away party when I left the University of Michigan, and which was, I think, a very telling fact that Pat cares about those around him, and that whom he cares about starts with his family, his colleagues, and his patients. And I'm not going to recount his career. It's available, you can read about it, other than to say that he actually became one of the most transformative leaders our field has ever produced, going from being the fellow of a country doctor like me to being department chair of a department of pediatrics at the University of Rochester, and multiple steps along the way. And I think that Pat's career holds many lessons for all of us, with the most important lesson being to care for each other and to make sure that everything you do at work is to benefit the kids and to benefit your team. The team includes everyone from the medical assistant to the people in the cafeteria to your boss. And we would all be served well to follow his example as we go on in our careers. And I think that's about all I can get out right now.
Thank you, Dr. Flynn. That was a very moving tribute. And I think everyone who was there during that session at ASPN was tremendously moved by the tribute that was paid to him from all of his colleagues, his mentors, his trainees, everybody over there. And it was very special to have his family there. And I think it was extra special to have it in Canada. But I'm going to call on Jody now to lead us through that entire awards reception ceremony and all of our awardees.
Great. Yeah, the awards luncheon was really special. Like you said, having Jody and Joe Brophy there made it, you know, extra special. And like you said, having it be in Toronto was just perfect. So we kicked off the awards ceremony with the most important people, the trainees. And so the winner of the Clinical Science Trainee Research Award was Gauri Kulkarni from Stanford. She, the day before, had presented her research. Her topic was site-specific utility of DEXA scans and the assessment of radius bone structure and density in children with CKD. So this is work that she does with Mary Leonard. And she did an excellent job. The awardee for the Basic Science Award is Natalie Holdsworth. And what's remarkable about her, she's from Nationwide, and she is a med student. And so that's incredible. And her topic was insulin resistance suppresses urinary innate immune defenses. And she's part of that special program at Nationwide, the super research program, which, you know, is especially important now as we start to think about how do we foster more interest in trainees more and more upstream. And so I think we can really learn a lot from Nationwide and what they're doing. It's pretty insanely great that this young trainee won this award. So those were the trainee awards. And then we did a Friend of ASPN award, which was new. We've never done that before, to acknowledge Dr. Pat Walker, who has really given to ASPN over the past almost 20 years with his involvement in the pathology webinar, with the member ed program, and then also through with the Battle of the Brains. And I didn't know this until Vicky shared with me. He comes to those meetings just on his own to really support us. And so, you know, we're just grateful that he seems to like to hang out with pediatric nephrologists, because we've all benefited from his, he's just so enthusiastic on those webinars, and he makes it all seem, you know, very doable to read pathology. So, so that was really special that we could, you know, sort of recognize him. And then we had our ASPN awards, where we, so these are new awards. This is the second year we've had them. The idea behind the creation of these awards was to just recognize all the amazing people who do amazing work with ASPN, you know, these dedicated, creative, generous people. And so we had the first was the ASPN Outstanding Service Award, which was won by Kim Reedy. The second was the ASPN Mid-Career Award, which was won by David Haynes. And then there was the ASPN Equity, Social Justice, and Advocacy Award, which was won by Sarah Swartz.
Congratulations to all the awardees, and congratulations to the awardees who are here with us on the podcast today. Jody, I think I'll call on Dr. Mann to talk about Samir Aldar a little bit, just a few words.
So we were very pleased to have the opportunity through the AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, for the Henry Barnett Award to choose Samir Aldar. That Henry Barnett is a visionary and leader in our field that most of us don't know. He started back in the 30s and 40s when pediatric nephrology was a budding nephron. But what was also really impressive about Henry's career was his advocacy for public health and for children beyond nephrology. And he had several amazing instrumental roles in public health in New York City, as well as a lot of significant involvement with the American Academy of Pediatrics. So chairing that committee, when we look at nominees, Samir really stood out, not only for his basic science awesomeness and the extensive work and NIH funding that he's had in renal development over the years, not only for his wonderful clinical skills and the satisfaction and pride that his patients and colleagues have for him, but also his advocacy in his community. And he was a major player in the recovery of New Orleans from Katrina, being involved in public health, medical services, disaster relief in a significant way. And we looked at all that. We thought this is Dr. Barnett in the modern era. So we're really pleased. And that's notwithstanding what he looked like when he played basketball as an older adolescent, because we were all subjected to those pictures as well, Suda. And I'm not sure any of us will forget those.
No, I was most impressed by him. And actually, I mean, it's there should be another award, which is for the most good-looking pediatric nephrologist, and he would win it hands down. But I also, Kim, I just saw your comment. Would you like to tell us about that?
Oh, Henry Barnett. So I guess I always pay attention because he was the chair of pediatrics at Jacoby Hospital, which is very close to Einstein. But he was the pediatrician in Los Alamos. Am I saying it right? And if anybody watched Oppenheimer this year, that's pretty impressive. So he was there. I think he saw the test bombs go off. And I think he went also to Japan and was the first physician to Okinawa, I want to say.
Yeah, he was very involved in the investigation, the effects of radiation on everyone, but particularly children. Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing all the things he did beyond, starting a first-class pediatric nephrology division.
Those are really illustrious people in the history of nephrology. And we have some future and present illustrious people here that received awards today. What do you say, Emily?
Yeah, congratulations to Kim, David, and Sarah. And I would love to ask you, number one, what do you think you're most proud of so far in your careers? And number two, how has ASPN helped you?
Let's start with Sarah.
I think I'm most proud of having the opportunity to be able to be a voice for our community and for our children with kidney disease. One of the things that I loved about pediatrics and pediatric nephrology was the ability to get to know a family and to be the voice of the child and help the child grow and develop and focus on growing and developing, and not so much why they were in the clinical office, which of course we all do every day, but it's more than that. And, one of the things I think you realize in all of that is someone needs to be a voice. Okay. The parents always try to advocate with what they think is the best for the child, but how do we make sure that they have the resources and the needs to meet everything, to accomplish everything that child needs? And for us, taking care of children who require dialysis or transplant, that really involves access to care and making sure that the whole interdisciplinary team can be involved and meet the needs of the child. And so advocacy really seemed to fit very nicely in that, both nationally and at the state level. As far as your second question, I really think from what ASPN has offered to me, was really introducing me to advocacy through so many different people that I've had the opportunity to meet and work with, who've helped introduce me to what advocacy is and then how you do it and how you move forward, and that there are bumps in the road, but you still have to be persistent. I would say JELF has been really instrumental in that, but it's also the people along the way that have taken the time to show me that your voice does mean something, as well as persistence does mean something.
Thanks. I really appreciate. Yeah, I appreciate how much you worked hard for this and have kind of paved the path for future nephrologists. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And again, there were a lot of people that were involved, really working together to help influence and make the changes that we are getting to see today. So truly, it was a group effort. But thank you.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, can you just tell us what JELF is?
It's the Johnny Louie Foundation. And so Dr. Louie was a pediatrician who also focused on advocacy and being a voice for pediatrics. And it is a scholar program or a leadership program that exists through ASPN to help teach both our fellows as well as our faculty what advocacy is and how to get more involved in the community to help be the voice for pediatrics.
Yes, and in fact, Jody is just reminding me that this year all the awardees were JELF scholars. So that's amazing. That's a great program coming out of ASPN.
Yeah. All right. Kim, do you want to go next?
Sure. So it's really hard to think about what I'm most proud of, but I think what I feel the most passionate about is seeing some of the people that I trained or trained with me when they were med students and then are now, you know, moving on and in faculty jobs, pursuing research and pediatric nephrology. That is a real joy. And I think that what I love about the ASPN is that, you know, every part of the involvement I've had with the organization has brought me new friends, new collaborations, new people to learn from, like Sarah and David doing the JELF program. And, you know, the skills that it then allows me to bring home to my home institution have been, I think, extremely helpful in my professional career. So it is such a rewarding thing to serve and do things for the ASPN. So everyone should join different committees and volunteer, because it's just a lot of fun. And I think a great part of my job and my life. So, thanks.
Yeah, a good group of people. Well, thanks and congrats. And David?
Yeah, my stuff's a lot along the same lines. So, you know, what am I most proud of? You know, coming off the heels of the PAS, we had two of our, you know, 12 nephrologists had to stay behind and hold down the fort, but the other 10 were there. And Sushil's on this podcast, and Marcy was on earlier. So it's like, you know, seeing and everybody in our group was participating in some meaningful way at this meeting. And so being part and being able to help bring together this group of wonderful nephrologists and build this community that then goes and interfaces on the national stage is just in the international stage. It's just tons of fun watching it happen. So I love these moments. So coming back, I was really proud of that today and yesterday. Along those lines of like, what does ASPN mean to me and what has it done for me? Like Sarah and Kim and I guess we got the congratulations, you're officially old awards now, but we all were like the junior people and kind of the new the, you know, up and comers way back when. And I got, Kim and I co-chaired the research committee way back when and did fun things with that. And then Sarah and I have been helping pick JELF scholars for the last decade or so. And that's been a ton of fun. So like, that's, you know, what I really like and get out of the ASPN, all those moments in that community that we get to be part of. It's so much fun.
Excellent. Well, congratulations to all the awardees. And now we're going to end the awards segment of this with a word from our fearless leader, Jody Smith, who has been the president of ASPN. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that she has been a transformational leader. And I see that we have Dr. Min and Dr. Flynn and Jody here. I want the three of you to talk to us a little bit about the leadership development work that is being done through the ASPN to round out this session.
Well, I'll be happy to start because another transformational leader of ASPN was really the impetus for this program. Back before 2010, Bill Schnapper, as president of ASPN, recognized the gap in leadership development that many of our young faculty and middle-level faculty felt that they weren't getting much opportunities to develop their leadership skills, and authorized us to pursue a leadership development program. And I think we found right from the start a pretty reasonable dose in over 1 year, and with three in-person sessions, having the magic of being in person and networking. And we've added some things over the years in terms of more rigorous mentors and reading assignments. But all along, there's been this concept of applying leadership concepts to leadership roles that individuals already have. And it's been amazing to look at the grads over, we're in our seventh cohort now. So looking at our grads over the last 6 years, many of them are actually at this meeting as well. So Dr. Reedy, Dr. Schwartz, Dr. Haynes, all attended the leadership development program. So we're very proud of that. And it's, you know, it's the energy you bring, motivation you bring, and it's been neat to see their development continue. And every other year we put on a leadership development program, and I hope we're able to continue that because we'll never be done filling that need. Right, Jody?
Yeah, right now all the council members have gone through the leadership development program. So it's a great service to our society.
Excellent. Emily, have I forgotten anything on our agenda?
No, thanks everyone for being here. We're going to talk about the sickle cell session next.
I was very honored to do the for this session, to be moderating the session. I want to give shout out to all the speakers, you know, excellent, experts in the area. Dr. Ataga from University of Tennessee talked about the progression of chronic kidney disease in this special population with sickle cell disease. We know that these are the patient where you have special needs, you know, when they need dialysis, when they need other, you know, end-stage kidney disease. So they are special needs, and their mortality, morbidity is so high, still high in spite of being modifier available for us, you know. So those are the things we'll discuss. Other speaker, we had Dr. Fig. He talked about how we can prevent the nephropathy. I think the few things came of the talk was monitoring, early monitoring of these patients, how we can monitor. Albuminuria is a one way we do it. Other way was pointed out, I think that was GFR, you know, hyperfiltration. The GFR is high. That might be an indicator for kidney injury. So those are the things needs to be picked up early in this group of patients so we can start them on modified therapy earlier and, you know, can make a difference in their course of the condition. Then Rima Zar from University of Tennessee, she talked about, you know, the patient, the special need if they go on dialysis, if they go on, you know, needing a dose dialysis, how how challenging those situations are when they get transplanted. What are the challenges we face? So then therapy-wise, we talked, the speaker talked about the modifier therapies, which are available, has been used very often in this population. Other curative therapies which came up is a stem cell transplantation, although comes with a lot of immunosuppression, a lot of challenges. So we are hoping that gene therapy, which has been approved by FDA, as you know, last December, two of those have been approved for this population. The challenges is just limited to a bigger center. The cost is associated with this therapy, but I think we are moving in the right direction, you know, as far as managing this group of patients. But till that this therapy is available, I think we still have to, make sure that we monitor these patients closely and start them on therapy, modifier therapy early, for better outcome.
Absolutely. I think that all the talks were excellent in this session. And, you know, especially as listening to Rima Zar's talk, and some of the things that just really like stood out to me were, you know, just how poor the survival is, even otherwise for sickle cell, which we sort of know, which is, you know, she said for SS disease, 42 years for males and 48 years for females. And once you develop kidney failure, stage 5 CKD, their mean survival is only 4 years after that. So it makes sense that, you know, we have to explore all the options, modifier therapies and, you know, mitigating therapies to prevent them to get to that CKD stage 5. So it was still very, very,
That is correct. So most of the patients, those who go on dialysis, even just around 40%, close to 40% of patient, they die within 2 to 3 years of
Right. So there is hope on the horizon for these families and these patients. And I think as pediatric nephrologists, we have to step up to the plate and protect those kidneys. And it's exciting to hear about all the new therapies that are on the horizon, which will spare the kidneys. I think it was an excellent session that you moderated. Yeah. And I think we need we're looking forward to more innovative therapies in this field, hopefully, that we will hear at future conferences.
That is correct. And shout out to all our organizers that they gave a special podium for this population. I think this was the first time, I guess, that sickle cell disease was a separate session.
Absolutely. I think we will be remiss if we do not thank our excellent program chairs, Catherine Dell, and then the co-chairs, Michelle Denberg and Daniel Sorano, who put together this wonderful, ideas and thoughts and new technologies, everything put together in such a fantastic session after session during these 3 to 3.5 days, I want to say, of ASPN programming that we had this year. And in future episodes, we hope to have them on so they can tell us exactly how they felt and how they went through it. This was indeed their baby, so to speak, and they pulled it off with aplomb. Thank you so much to all of our guests today, and thank you for coming on and talking to us about some of the programming at ASPN 2024.